The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is That's a Laugh. For the next half hour, I'll be reading excerpts of funny stories, quotes, and other anecdotes from various sources that we hope will add a few chuckles to your day. To start off today's episode, please enjoy these funny quotes found on darlingquote.com. In ancient times, cats were worshipped as gods. They have not forgotten this. Anybody who doesn't know what soap tastes like never washed a dog. Dogs come when they are called. Cats take a message and get back to you later. Yes, indeed, my dear listeners. It is an episode all about the lovingly funny things animals do. Well, sort of. Today's tales are likely just that. Tall tales. No pun intended. Okay, maybe a little. And who is the officially recognized sovereign of tall tales? Why, Bill Lepp, American storyteller and 5-time winner of the West Virginia State Liars Contest, of course. Today we'll hear his totally not entirely too far-fetched recollections of animal stories. First up, from his book, Inept, Impaired, Overwhelmed, Tall Tales from West Virginia, published in 2012, the chapter, Woodpeckers Just Don't Make the Best Pets. When you are young and desperate to become a lion tamer or a big game outfitter, you are apt to run into trouble. Living in the heart of West Virginia, I found very little big game to hunt and far fewer lions to tame, especially when I was 11. So I did the next best thing. Every Saturday morning, I would rise while the dew was still wet on the ground, wolf down a bowl of cereal, pull on my long johns, and watch cartoons. Cartoons can be just as dangerous as a charging rhino when you are pumped up on choco nuggets and at an impressionable age. Though I never hurt myself dropping anvils off cliffs, or by strapping rocket-powered ice skates to my feet, or even by accidentally swallowing a whole cake that had a stick of dynamite for a candle, I was still endangered. It was that woodpecker with the crazy laugh that finally got me into a jam. From the very first time I saw him, I wanted a woodpecker for a pet. As a child, I had not noticed that you hardly ever see anyone who has a woodpecker for a pet, and so I didn't think twice about the fact that it might just be a bad idea. We lived out in the country. In my backyard, there was a rotten tree that was almost 5 feet tall and hollow most of the way down. I was watching that tree one afternoon when a huge pileated woodpecker landed on it and started pecking away. As I watched, a hole grew in the tree beneath the reciprocating beak of that big bird. Bigger and bigger the hole grew until it was big enough for him to slip through. He looked to his left, looked to his right, and then slid into the hollow tree. In a few seconds he reappeared, only to launch himself into the air. For the next hour, I watched as he returned time and again with a beak full of twigs or straw or yarn. It dawned on me that he must have been building a nest. And then it dawned on me that this woodpecker might just make the perfect pet. I knew that to have a pet bird, a person also must have a birdcage. My family was poor and earthy. That is to say, not the sort of family that had an antique, exotic birdcage in the attic. In fact, we did not even have an attic. I also knew that if I had asked my parents for a birdcage, I would have gotten the same response I had gotten when I had asked for the anvil, the rocket skates, and the dynamite. So if I wanted a birdcage, I was going to have to build it myself. I searched the woods high and low for the best assortment of sticks that I could find. I cut them to size and bound them together with binder's twine and wood glue. Like most things built by an 11-year-old craftsman, the artistry of my cage was only surpassed by its pristine engineering. I put the finished cage on the dresser in my bedroom and then set out to capture my bird. I had a plan to catch the woodpecker, but I was going to need an accomplice if the plan was going to be successful. My neighbor, Skeeter Barth, was always up to bagging wild game, so I shared my dream with him. I had to consent to his demands of half-ownership and visitation rights, but that seemed like a really good idea. By claiming half-ownership in the bird, Skeeter automatically became half-liable for any foul-ups or mishaps that might arise due to the ensuing woodpecker hunt. Though I strongly doubted that anything would go wrong, it was comforting to know that in the event of complete disaster or bodily injury, Skeeter would be in as much trouble as I would. Really, our plan was ingenious. Which leaves me wondering how Skeeter and I came up with it. All we needed was a burlap bag, a stepladder, and a bucket of water. Not since before we had been introduced to Tom and Huck had a plan of ours not required, at the bare minimum, a kerosene torch or at least a dead cat. All we had to do was wait until the woodpecker came home for the night. And when he did, we simply snuck up to the tree. Skeeter held the burlap sack over the hole the woodpecker had made, and I climbed the ladder and poured the bucket of water down the hollow tree. A terrible squalling burst forth from within the trunk. Old fungus-covered bits of bark shook loose from the tree as the deluged woodpecker spun circles inside the stump, trying to discover the source of the flood. Becoming more and more upset, the woodpecker sprang from his nest. Unfortunately for the bird, Skeeter had maintained his position, and when the woodpecker flew out of the tree, he went right into the burlap sack. Just like that, Skeeter and I had caught ourselves one fine woodpecker. And this time, we hadn't even set the woods on fire. Congratulating ourselves on a job well done, we tied the bag shut and headed toward the house. If I knew my mother, she would be by the back door, wringing her hands and contemplating what Skeeter and I were up to. So, we went in the front door. It is not that I wanted to cause my mother worry, but she had an almost pathological need to know what I was bringing into the house. Rarely could I pass through the kitchen with a twitching, wiggling, yelping burlap bag that she didn't demand to know what I was bringing into her home. It was silly, really, and I had learned to avoid the encounter. However, if she suspected that an unknown creature had made it into my room, she was much less likely to barge in. The time she found my pet skunk while vacuuming under the bed taught her, so far as I was concerned, a valuable, if unpleasant, lesson. Skeeter and I slipped through the front door and up the stairs to my bedroom. Needless to say, Skeeter was visibly impressed with the cage I had built. When he said, "What a piece of junk! Did you find it at the dump or down by the river? That'll never hold a woodpecker. It's made of dead wood." I could hear the jealousy and wonder in his voice. I cast him an understanding glance, took the burlap bag from his hand, and opened the door of my cage and let the woodpecker hop into its new home. By that time, most of the glue had dried, and the door only fell apart twice before I got it shut. We quickly discovered that woodpeckers make odd pets. Even though they eat bugs and such, you can't really call woodpeckers carnivorous in the same sense that you would a man-eating lion or a great white shark. And yet, we were soon to learn that woodpeckers can put on a ferocious front. The big bird sat on its perch, regaining its composure. It glanced at the cage, then studied the room. The window was shut, as was the door. Satisfied with the room, the woodpecker leaned forward and tapped the cage with his beak, lightly, almost playfully. And then he reared back and attacked the bars of his cage like a rabid jackhammer on a balsa wood sidewalk. Skeeter and I went from proud, calm bird owners sitting on the edge of my bed to screaming, horror-driven 11-year-olds in less than a second. The woodpecker, now loose, swooped around the room and dove at us. We were jumping up and down, clutching each other for safety, yelling at the top of our lungs. The devil bird strafed our heads with its razor-like talons and then landed on the doorknob. Splinters flew as he cut into the door. With a blur of his yellow beak and his red head, he bore through the wood like a carbide-tipped drill bit. As we watched the woodpecker's tail disappear through the hole he had cut in the door, Skeeter and I sighed and then fell back onto the bed exhausted. In our relief to be alive, it had not occurred to us that the woodpecker was not gone, but rather presently at large in the house proper with my nervous mother. Already my mind was looking for a way to deny that I had had anything to do with the woodpecker, but the cage, the assorted feathers on the floor, and the perfect woodpecker-sized hole in the door were pretty damning evidence. As my mind raced for an excuse, I hit on the idea of claiming that I was participating in a catch-and-release study being conducted by the Federal Game Commission. It was thin, but better than fessing up. I waited for my mother's screams. When my mother failed to be alarmed by the hellbird cruising the house on a search-and-destroy mission, I began to fear the worst. She had either seen the bird and just plain died, or the woodpecker had crept up on her, captured her, gagged her, and was now holding her hostage. Mustering our courage, we decided to investigate. Before leaving the room, we put our ears to the door. Hearing nothing, I looked out the woodpecker hole. Seeing nothing, I began to slowly open the door. I nearly fainted when the door was jerked from my hands, conjuring up images of the woodpecker landing on my face and going for the kill. And then I heard my mother's voice saying, "Well, what in the world are you two up to? All that screaming." And then her ire growing, "And what is that pile of rotten sticks on your dresser? And my lands, how did you get this hole in your door?" I looked up at my mother, tried to remember my lie, but all I could say was, "It was the woodpecker, that awful woodpecker." Skeeter and I began sobbing. "Don't you lie to me, young man. You're grounded. A woodpecker putting a hole in your door? I've never heard such a thing. Forevermore." To this day, I do not know what became of that woodpecker. For the longest time, I was sure it was in the house, lurking in some dark corner, waiting to strike. Mother thought I was crazy for wearing an army helmet and a neck brace around the house for the rest of the summer, but I wasn't taking any chances. As I grew older, I began to assume that the woodpecker had just flown out the front door. If there was one thing Skeeter and I never did, it was close the door when we came in through. Or the woodpecker might have gone out one of the many windows in the house. Regardless of its route of escape, I was never so glad to have had a pet run away. Yes, a boy has got to be cautious and has got to choose his pets carefully. Always remember that cartoons are fiction, and that woodpeckers, panthers, coyotes, roadrunners, and skunks, no matter how lovable and ingenious they may be on TV, do not always make the best pets. Okay, folks, gather round for our next story by Bill Lepp. From his book, Armadillo Recon Unit and Other Tall Tales, published in 2004, the chapter, The Fall of Babel On. Author's warning, this story contains many varied and very bad puns. Reader discretion is advised for those with pun tolerance disorder, small children, expectant mothers, those with heart conditions, and the sober. Early one Sunday morning, I was taking a walk in the woods near my house when I began to hear a sound like trumpets coming from over the mountaintop. The trumpeting had a church-like quality, and it being Sunday morning, I thought perhaps some congregation had decided to take its services outdoors. Intrigued, I turned toward the sound and headed uphill. Not wishing to disturb the service, I flattened myself on the hilltop and slowly inched my way toward the edge of the rise. I was amazed at what I saw when I looked over the hill, and a voice inside my head said, "Write this down." Down below me on the river's edge, there was indeed a church service of some sort going on, but it was not humans worshiping. It was animals instead. I watched closely for some time, trying to figure out what was going on. Hundreds of different species were gathered around a central figure who was leading the group in a song. There were skunks, beavers, bears, cows, birds, mice, rats, raccoons, bugs, and dogs. I did notice, however, that there were no Dalmatians. I guessed it was a non-Dalmatianal congregation. They also had a candelabra set up, bearing 7 burning candles. The creature preacher finished his sermon to the faithful flock by saying, "I know your works, your toil, and your patience endure, and how you cannot bear evil men." Behind the creature preacher were 7 seals with the trumpets I had heard, a small rodent who must have been a chipmunk, wearing a brown robe, and quite a few praying mantises. Behind these 7 seals stood 7 horses dressed in colored choir robes. The hoarse chorus began singing as the ushers began taking up the collection. The ushers were all huskies, with shining coats and bright blue eyes. The head usher, I was surprised to see, was in fact a man wearing a parka and leaning on a sled. I quickly surmised that he was the usher musher. As the ushers came forward with the tithes, an ox stepped forward and appropriately led the group in the doxology. "Praise God, all creatures here below," he sang, "except Dalmatians and buffalo." When the offering was taken, a door opened in a tree and out stepped a rainbow trout. The rainbow trout sat down in a throne, and around him sat 24 adders. Around the trout's throne there sat a lion, the ox doxologist, the usher musher, and an eagle. The eagle must have been Catholic, because everyone addressed him as Cardinal Eagle. The cardinal, who was actually an eagle, rose and asked who had come to be baptized, and from the congregation stepped a church mouse and a cat. The cardinal stepped into the stream, said a prayer, and dunked the church mouse beneath the surface. The ushers, the usher musher, the lion, the ox doxologist, the chipmunk, the trout, the adders, the creature preacher, the horse chorus, the 7 seals, the praying mantises, and the faithful flock all sang out a joyous prayer. And then the cat stepped into the stream. The cat stood shaking in the shallow water as the cardinal prayed over him. After the prayer, the cardinal picked up the cat and dunked him in the water. Again, the ushers, the usher musher, the lion, the ox doxologist, the chipmunk, the trout, the adders, the creature preacher, the horse chorus, the 7 seals, the praying mantises, and the faithful flock all sang out a joyous prayer. I didn't know what denomination the animals were, but if they were dunking, they weren't Methodists. Anyway, for a creature that hates water, I felt that the cat had done remarkably well with the procedure. To my surprise, the cardinal began praying again, and then lifted the cat, and then dunked him again. And again, the ushers, the usher musher, the lion, the ox doxologist, the chipmunk, the trout, the adders, the creature preacher, the horse chorus, the seven seals, the praying mantises, and the faithful flock all sang out a joyous prayer. The cat looked less pleased, but still allowed the baptism. And then it all happened again, and again. Each time the cat grew more and more agitated. Confused, I thought the matter over, and at last it dawned on me. Cats have 9 lives, and thus they need to be baptized 9 times. Simple theology. By the 6th dunking, the cat was starting to squirm something fierce. On the 7th, he went rigid. On the 8th, he thrust out his claws, and while the cardinal was praying over the cat in preparation for the final baptism, the cat happened to spot the church mouse sitting atop a rock. The cat looked up at the cardinal and saw that his eyes were closed. The cat glanced around the congregation and realized that everyone, including the ushers, the usher-musher, the lion, the ox doxologist, the chipmunk, the trout, the adders, the creature preacher, the horse chorus, the seven seals, the praying mantises, and all of the faithful flock had their eyes closed. The cat, 8 of his souls thoroughly dunked and saved, suddenly decided that he was mightily hungry and that it was better to have 8 saved souls and a full belly than it was to have 9 salvations and go hungry. 8 parts angel, 1 part hellcat, the feline dove for the church mouse. When the cat dove, he knocked over the candelabra loaded with 7 ceremonial candles burning brightly. The candles fell into the pine needles, covering the riverbank, and the river's edge burst into flame. Hearing the clatter and feeling the heat, the cardinal, the ushers, the usher-musher, the lion, the ox doxologist, the chipmunk, the trout, the adders, the creature preacher, the horse chorus, the 7 seals, the praying mantises, and the faithful flock all opened their eyes to the flame and saw the light. The mostly saved cat landed on the rock where the church mouse had been sitting, but the church mouse was already headed through the crowd and looking to escape. The seals, seated behind the rainbow trout, panicked and began breaking to the left and right. When the seals broke, the horses in the horse chorus ran from behind them, their red, white, black, and tan robes blowing in the breeze as they charged through the crowd of animals, trampling the helpless and overturning the food which the congregation had brought for lunch. And the fire burned up nearly a third of the forest. The ushers, being dogs, saw it as their duty to chase the hellcat, who was chasing the church mouse. The usher-musher followed in close pursuit, followed by the lion, the ox doxologist, the chipmunk, the trout, the adders, the creature preacher, and the praying mantises. The cardinal, who, remember, was actually an eagle, flew strafing runs at the cat's head. The mouse dodged through the legs of the faithful, and the cat continued his pursuit. The horses of the chorus had calmed a bit and gathered at the far edge of the crowd, attempting to set up a roadblock to stop the cat. Meanwhile, the lion had picked up a pan and was trying to scoop up the cat. While the church mouse ran, the cat fast on his heels, the lion with the pan dashed up and grabbed the cat. The lion put the cat in his pan just as they got to the choir of horses. But before the lion could thoroughly trap the cat leaped from the lion's pan into the choir. The church mouse, the cat, the ushers, the usher-musher, the lion, the ox doxologist, the chipmunk, the trout, the adders, the creature preacher, the horse chorus, the 7 seals, the praying mantises, and the faithful flock ran faster and faster toward the edge of a nearby ravine. At the edge of the ravine, the church mouse jumped. The cat, with the 8 saved souls and 1 lost soul, jumped after the church mouse. The ushers, the usher musher, the lion, the ox doxologist, the chipmunk, the trout, the adders, the creature preacher, the horse chorus, the seven seals, the praying mantises, and the faithful flock all stopped short of the edge. The cardinal swooped down and tried to catch the church mouse, but missed. The church mouse fell all the way down to the stream below, splashing into the deep black waters. The cardinal corrected his dive and grabbed the cat. Taking the cat to what was believed to be a bottomless pit, the cardinal dropped the 8 part saved and 1 part not saved cat into the pit. The cardinal, the ushers, the usher-musher, the lion, the ox-doxologist, the chipmunk, the trout, the adders, the creature preacher, the horse chorus, the seven seals, the praying mantises, and the faithful flock gathered down by the stream to mourn the loss of the church mouse. While they mourned, they noticed a cod swimming upriver with the church mouse on her head. They all smiled in recognition as they waved to the cod, who everyone called Grace. Grace had caught the church mouse and delivered him safely home. So, in the end, most of the cat went to heaven. The church mouse was saved by Grace the cod, and the 9th part of the cat, the unsaved soul, spent eternity in perdition. And you thought my puns were bad. To wrap up today's episode, I leave you with these additional quotes about animals from darlingquotes.com. A cat is a puzzle for which there is no solution. Did you ever walk into a room and forget why you walked in? I think that is how dogs spend their lives. If a dog jumps in your lap, it is because he is fond of you. But if a cat does the same thing, it is because your lap is warmer. We've run out of time for today's episode of That's a Laugh. We hope you've enjoyed it. Please be sure to listen again next time. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. That's a Laugh is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Are you enjoying the show? Do you have any humorous quotes or authors you'd like to share? We'd love to hear from you. If you have any comments or questions about this or any other NCRS shows, please call us at 919-832-5138. Our number one more time is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.